Welcome to Talking History. This is your host, Brian LeBeau of Creighton University's Department of History. On March 11, 1990, Lithuania declared its independence, setting off one of the most dramatic acts of resistance to the former Soviet Union of that era. In today's special program, Talking History's Terry Clark talks with two of the principal figures in that movement, one who left Lithuania only to return 50 years later, and another who stayed and helped lead that country to its independence. But before we do that, let's take a look at an important event that occurred this week in history. During this week in 1872, Pinckney Pinchback became America's first black governor. He became governor of Louisiana after Henry Warmoth was impeached and removed from that office. Pinchback was born free to a Mississippi plantation owner and a former slave of mixed ancestry. During the Civil War in 1862, he went to Union-controlled Louisiana and enlisted in an all-white Union Army regiment, wherein, despite discrimination, he rose to the rank of captain. After the war, he lectured throughout the South on better education for blacks and was elected to the Louisiana State Senate. He served as President Pro Tem of the Senate, Louisiana Lieutenant Governor, and beginning in December 1872, Governor. Later in life, Pinckney Pinchback served as one of the founders of Southern University. Turning to items of historical interest in the news, Dallas schoolteacher Jean Hill, better known as the Lady in Red, seen in Anthony Zapruder's film of the Kennedy assassination, has died. Hill stood a mere 15 feet from the car in which Kennedy was riding when he was shot. Nevertheless, historians consider her an unreliable witness. When she testified before the Warren Commission, she explained that she had heard shots coming from a grassy knoll in front of the motorcade. 25 years later, she recanted her earlier account and said instead that she had seen a man with a rifle in the Texas School Book Depository. This is Talking History. Talking History's Terry Clark spent the past year in Lithuania as a Fulbright lecturer. While there, he took advantage of an opportunity to talk to two men who figured prominently in Lithuania's move toward independence.
World War II violently uprooted millions of citizens of East Central Europe. Some of these refugees found their way to the West, where they struggled to maintain their cultures and their families. The collapse of communist rule in the 1990s, however, made it possible for many of these to return to their native countries. I will be speaking to one of those who returned. His name is Valdas Adamkus, and he was elected the President of the Republic of Lithuania in 1998.
What were the circumstances then that brought you to the United States?
In my case, the decision which has been made in 1944 to go away from home, leave everything behind, was because in 1941 I had an unfortunate circumstances, the life which I have spent under the first Russian occupation. And we have experienced, even as a child, I saw the deportations to the Siberia of innocent people, women, children. I saw that people tortured. I have seen, how innocent people were put to jail for no reason at all. The only crime they have committed because they were not actually committed themselves to the communist ideology, communist party, and all that stuff. So that terror, which has been actually developed in one single year of the Russian occupation, was still vivid, not only in everybody's mind who was impacted, but in a young man's mind like mine, which simply decided to run away from that oncoming the Russian army, Red Army, to avoid any possible deportations and even destruction of the human beings. So we just rather decided to leave everything behind the home, to leave the country and go into the unknown And that's the way it happened for me. And that's the way we left our home with a great anticipation and belief in the Western powers that the war will be over shortly, that the Western democracies will prevail, that Nazis and the Hitler armies, dictatorship will fall, and the Western democracies will probably force the Russian communists, I mean, pull back into their original territories, and the Lithuania will become free and independent again. So that was false assumption, and myself and people like me actually paid for that mistake, for the long 50 years absence from Lithuania, from our own home.
How old were you, Mr. President, when you left with your family?
I was 16, 17 years of age.
If I understand correctly, you spent some time in the resistance prior to your leaving, is that correct?
Yes, for a couple of months I was in the western part of the country where young people, when I look it back, I mean, just armed with the idealism and total misconception of the real situation, decided that we can stay over there, get organized, and stop the Red Army advancing towards west. And of course, with the bare hands, you cannot do that when the very well-equipped Red Army, supported by the Western powers with the latest technology, weapons, and everything else, was just destroying the Germans. And we thought, I mean, but with our idealism, we can stop, I mean, that kind of a military machine. So I stayed over there. I witnessed, I mean, that a lot of my friends who were with me over there, they were killed. I was one of the few fortunate ones who somehow got away, I mean, through the front lines and reached the Western state over there until the very end of the activities, the military activities, and was liberated by the United States Army.
And then you came to the United States, and as I understand it, you had a very successful career and eventually retired as an executive in the Environmental Protection Agency. But after your retirement, what led to your decision ultimately to return to Lithuania?
I believe this was some evolutionary way, I mean, which brought me back to Lithuania. Since 1972, as a member of the United States Environmental Delegation to the Soviet Union, every year I have participated in a direct, cooperation work in that field, visiting the Soviet Union. And at the very end of my official assigned duties, I tried always to manage at the same time to come to Lithuania here, spend a week or 10 days. At the very beginning, it was extremely difficult because the Russian communists did not trust me. I was followed by the KGB agents every move I have made. But year after year, they recognized that I am probably not the one who is going to overthrow the government and the entire Russian system. So they allowed me to meet with the environmentalists, with the ecologists, with the scientists who were working in that field. I had the opportunity, probably very few lucky ones, fortunate ones, who for the last 27 years had the opportunity to follow the evolution of the communism from the very tough position when it started, when President Nixon and Brezhnev have signed and made agreements to cooperate in a scientific exchange on environment until the very last days of Gorbachev. So this probably provided me the opportunity to understand in depth the impact of the communism on a society, understand the psychology of the Lithuanian people in their resistance, fighting the communist ideology and philosophy at the same time, And I have to admit, it provided me the opportunity to talk, speak to younger generation. And between the lines, when you speak about the environment and ecology, you could speak about the nationalism, if in a good sense of the word nationalism, about the Lithuanian cultural accomplishments, about the Western ideals, about one or two words about the democracy and the human rights. And that probably gave me the opportunity to expose myself to the Lithuanian society, and I have been admitted by young and old throughout those years, as I found later.
That's a substantial investment on your part and a substantial amount of effort to stay in contact with the country. Despite that, was there anything that surprised you when you came back as president?
When you are on the streets and you look around, and sometimes you see maybe not everybody, but in general people are smiling, expressing themselves. At that time, what really surprised me when I came in, whenever I looked around, it was a sober expression on their faces. You couldn't see a single smile on a face. You even couldn't see the people look you into the eye. I mean, the people are walking on the street and they don't see. They are looked down where they are going, and probably they never see, who just passed by. And that was a shocking experience.
Mr. President, the minute that we have left, are you optimistic about the future of your country?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Because when I look at what the country has accomplished, this coming totally from the very closed society, dictatorship, where private initiative was absolutely not even understandable, to the human beings. Now we have, in a full sense, I would say the full democracy. Look at the newspapers. Freedom of expression. It's a difficult time because the world is moving ahead, and this country has to catch up the 50 years of isolation. But the progress which has been made and the initiative which has been shown, inviting the foreign countries, the foreign capital, because they are failures. There's no secret. It's a very difficult economic times. A lot of bankruptcies, a lot of mismanagement. But that people are learning, and that's extremely encouraging. Now the Lithuania already has been invited to begin the negotiations within the European Union. This opens up absolutely a new horizons. But at the same time, that actually shows that international community, European countries, are accepting Lithuania as an equal member, providing them equal opportunity in planning the future. And that's quite an accomplishment in 10 years.
Different from the story of President Valdis Adamkus is that of another man. He was there when Lithuania brazenly declared unconditional independence from the Soviet Union in 1990. On the evening of March 11, 1990, under the leadership of Professor Vytautas Landsbergis, the newly constituted Republican legislature formally declared the restoration of the country's pre-war independence. What followed for the next 18 months was a tense, often violent standoff for control of Lithuania's economic, political, and social life. Professor Vytautas Landsbergis talked with me about his experiences.
Mr. Landsbergis, in 1990, few in the West believed it was possible that any part of the Soviet Union would ever gain its independence. How did the idea to declare Lithuania's independence from the Soviet Union emerge?
To finish with the occupation, that absolutely clear idea was easily understandable. No country would like to remain occupied forever. From the legal point, Lithuania was not a legitimate part of the Soviet Union, but forcibly annexed European state.
So what steps did you have to take to go about reestablishing Lithuania's independence after you declared it?
The great grassroots Soviet reform movement gained broad and strong support of our people in 1988 won elections against communist administration in 1989 and again to Lithuania's parliament in February of 1990. Has the received mandate of our people to express the sovereign will of Lithuanian nation and implemented it on March 11, 1990. It was legal and constitutional restoration of Lithuanian state, followed by intensive building and defense activities.
Just for clarity, then, I understand that Sąjūdis was a national movement for independence. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. So, of course, so.
And you were the leader of that movement. Is that also correct at the time?
Yes, I was elected chairman. Mm-hmm.
Now, what kind of opposition did you and Sąjūdis meet during the independence struggle?
Well, naturally, direct and angry opposition was met from Kremlin side. Just after the Baltic Way manifestation in 1989, and especially after constitutional restoration of independent statehood in 1990. You may remind diplomatic and economic blockade, misinformation war, and bloodshed in Vilnius in January 1991. Soviet influence or infiltrated opposition was also felt in the West. But especially active was communist and KGB-manipulated opposition inside of Lithuania.
So there was a considerable degree, then, of opposition to your movement?
But support was also strong and great. Mm-hmm.
Support mostly from the population?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, the opposition was then from the Kremlin in Moscow, is that correct?
It is one opposition, and also, of course, unconscious of the changes of losing privileges and manipulated by Germany.
So some Lithuanians also then wanted to stay in the Soviet Union?
Yes, there has been an influence of person who did not believe that full independence is possible, and they thought that it is better to try to achieve great autonomy.
This opposition sometimes became violent. And if I understand it, the most violent events occurred in January 1991. Can you tell us what happened in that month?
So the troops illegally stationed still in Lithuania in January 1991. And also new special units as KGB Alpha were brought into Lithuania for special tasks of killers and occupiers. They attacked our state buildings of TV and radio, which were defended then by masses of unarmed people. A lot of them were injured and 13 killed. And that brave civic resistance of them and brutality of aggressors shocked the world, and some international protests stopped headquarters in Moscow from an order to attack parliament and complete the coup d'etat in Lithuania.
At the time, you were in the parliament, is that not correct?
Yes, I was days and nights in parliament.
And you were, in essence, the president of the republic at the time?
Yes, I was the head of state according to a temporary constitution.
Just from a personal perspective, were you not concerned for your own life or those of your family at that time?
I was concerned about my family, but about my own life, it seemed not very important.
And there were outside how many people surrounding the parliament trying to help defend it?
They usually were thousands, 10,000, or maybe just deciding tonight about 100,000.
100,000 people. Mm-hmm. And
you can see it on the pictures and photos. It was a sea of people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's why the Soviet army made the decision not then to attack the parliament building?
I was told about expression, alleged possible expression of one Russian officer. There we are too much of meat.
This is too much meat.
Yes.
So they would have had to kill too many people. A few months later, there was another event of violence, if you will allow me just quickly to talk about this, at a border post that Lithuania had with the country of now Belarus, which was then also part of the Soviet Union. Can you just very briefly tell me what happened there?
It was a terrible night of 31 of July, just after we signed a treaty with Yeltsin about relations between Russian Federation and Lithuania. This night, seven men, border guards and policemen were killed in a very brutal Gestapo and NKVD manner. And they were put on the floor and shoot across the skull.
They were shot in the head?
Yes, they were shot in the head. Only one remained alive. It was a miracle. So.
Talking about something perhaps more pleasant, the Soviet Union collapsed in August of 1991. What challenges then faced Lithuania?
Challenges at once. They were continued presence of Russian troops, unregulated border issues, incomplete regulation of relations with neighboring countries, necessity to introduce stable national currency, to continue free market and agriculture as well as legal, administrative and other reforms, to create from zero a national armed forces, to enter integration processes with EU and NATO, etc. We went through all of that, having ups and downs, achieving much more of simple regulation and course of reform.
So you've achieved most of these, what by any accounts would have to be very difficult challenges.
The challenges were similar in all surrounding countries, which liberated themselves from communism and from Soviet dictatorship. We have this a dual task, more difficult as other Central European countries of so-called people's democracy. They liberated from communism, or we have to liberate us from communism and from Soviet empire. Time.
And you still had Soviet troops in Lithuania then?
Yes, then we had still, but we began to negotiate immediately with President Yeltsin about withdrawal, and it was a successful course. We have been in a good friendly relations with him, and we achieved agreement about and complete withdrawal in 1 year. And in 1 year more, they went out. Sooner as from Germany and as from Poland. Lithuania was the first in the region free from Russian troops.
2 years after formal recognition from the international community of your independence. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
You also said in your list that the country wanted to enter NATO. Has the country done that yet?
Not yet, but we are maybe near to threshold. And doors, as you know, are open.
Speaking of NATO, the United States is, of course, a very important country in NATO. What assistance has the United States provided in overcoming these challenges that you spoke of?
It was important and great assistance, of course, first in general, as political support, strengthening our independence and security. It was and remains very remarkable. In that also, the support for our forthcoming membership in NATO. Investments from US came not at once and not as a special American program sort of Marshall Plan, but in normal ways. Anyway, several great companies, as Philip Morris, Coca-Cola, Cargill, Williams International, are already there, bringing us the significant input of capital, know-how, and fair business customers.
Are you optimistic about the future of Lithuania?
Yes, I am. A personal reason. I work for it. I'm concerned about new trends in Russia, but I use always to stand on a philosophical reason also. Insanity of the world is not forever.
You have been listening to Professor Vytautas Landsbergis, the former Speaker of the National Legislature of the Republic of Lithuania.
Thank you, Terry. And for our site of the week, we recommend two sites in Lithuania associated with that country's independence movement. The first is the western tower of the city of Vilnius' Upper Castle, a 14th century fortification that once helped Lithuanians resist foreign invasion. The tower now proudly flies the Lithuanian flag, which was banned during Soviet times, as a symbol of that country's independence. The second site is the Hill of Crosses, located just outside Šiauliai, Lithuania. Also centuries old and steeped in legend as a religious site, thousands of crosses now mark the spot where Lithuanians resisted Soviet attempts to smother religion in that country. Turning to our weekly segment, Coming Attractions, the Smithsonian Institution has opened a new exhibit that might interest many of our listeners in the nation's heartland. Listening to the Prairie, Farming in Nature's Image at the National Museum of Natural History tells the story of American prairie farming. It explains how early American farmers learned to plow the prairie and how farming practices and machinery have changed over the years. The exhibit closes on March 31, 2001, but it will then travel to 20 other sites around the country. For further information, contact the National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. And that's it for another week of Talking History. I hope you've enjoyed our program and that you will join us next week when we'll take a look at the building of the first transcontinental railroad. Until then, we invite you to send us your comments or suggestions by email at talkinghistory@creighton.edu. From the studios of KIOS-FM in Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian LeBeau.